Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 53 for March 21st, 2008. SP None. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/windows. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, the Windows expert at the supersite for Windows.com. I'm sorry, the supersite for Windows at winsupersite.com. It's kind of flip-flopped. Whatever, he says. Also the author of Windows Vista Secrets, which will soon be Windows Vista SP1 Secrets.
That's what we should call it.
Yes. And a welcome breath of fresh air and warm coffee on the TWiT network.
I should bring my espresso machine in here while we record.
I just ordered a second Elite Cafe machine. I can't believe it. I'm such a sucker.
I don't know what kind we have, but it's we love it. And it wasn't working with, and we found out it was just the coffee we were using.
You have to have the right grind.
Yeah, but and it's very particular on a machine basis.
Absolutely. But I didn't want to have to go down upstairs for my coffee, so I have one for upstairs and one for downstairs now.
You know, I want to,
I may not have the energy to make
it. I don't know how we got off on this, but I actually make coffee in the espresso machine every day because after going to France a couple of years in a row.
Spoils you.
Yeah. Come home and you just can't drink.
Can't get the
coffee.
Drip.
So,
please.
It sounds, I know.
Percolator, please.
It's just French press. No, but we're doing the kitchen over, and I looked into getting a water line just for the.
You know who did that? Steve Gibson did that.
Yeah.
He had a plumber come in.
Right. Well, we have a plumber coming in, so I'm going to talk to him about
it. Oh, God. You guys.
I know this is crossing some line.
It is.
You know,
a line I would like to cross, to be honest. I think it's a great thing.
I know a guy who owns a coffee, a cafe in Dedham Square, and he has a beautiful, as you would expect, huge commercial machine. And I was saying to my wife, I think this would actually just fit. right in the corner here.
Think of all the money you'd save. At $4
exactly,
a latte?
That's exactly what she said.
At $4 bucks a latte, how many lattes a day would you drink? You'd probably do 3 or 4. They'd probably cost you 50 cents to make. You're saving $3.50. Let's say you're saving $14 a day. That thing costs $14,000. So in 3 years, it's paid for.
Right. I'm going to have you mention that to my wife because you don't have to explain it to me. No. I don't even care that it adds up in any way.
It pays for itself in 3 years.
It pays for itself. That's exactly what you want. It pays for itself.
Now, you're going to think I'm crass. First of all, I'm not crass because Ely Cafe is, without a doubt, the best espresso. I mean, there's just not even a question.
So, actually, that's the coffee we buy.
Of course it is because you have good taste.
Well, we've been through a lot of
Ely is the
things.
Best.
It's the best, yeah.
Dr. Ely passed away about a month ago.
I didn't know that.
But, with all that coffee, he was only, 80, but he looked like he was 130. I mean, it was just amazing.
No. Okay, so
I'm joking.
I don't know how we got on that. I make fun of people who read spam mail and respond to spam mail, or even the mail you get, physical mail that's just ridiculous local business stuff. And I know, there are people out there who just look forward to this, but I actually get the Ely, mailings because I buy all this stuff from them.
Yep, me too.
And I have to tell you, I am like, this is one of my little weaknesses,
That's no weakness.
I look at the machines,
that's
the little...
That's a strength, Paul.
Like a brass tamp, device, no, things like that. You know what I'm saying?
Weakness.
I'm an idiot.
I have two Ely machines. I have two Francis's.
Yeah.
And they're really good. They use now, this is kind of the negative. Although I think for an office, it's a good thing. They use the ESE pods. So you buy the Ely Cafe in the pod.
Okay.
It's fresh
now,
because it's sealed.
Do you have the option to do both?
You could, you could put grounds in it, but it's so much neater for an office just to do pods. And it makes it makes a perfect, the crema is great. It makes a perfect, I think, espresso.
Well, that's the thing. That's what you need.
And these are good machines with lots of pressure.
I'm going to send you a photograph of one of my espressos.
Oh, I want to see it. You don't do the little leaf pattern, do you?
No, I'm not. I'm not like a Guinness guy or anything. I can't do the little signs, but I mean, they're perfect.
I'd like to welcome you to Barista Talk today on the Twitter.
It's like watching a food show where the guy eats something and goes, "Oh man, this is so good! I wish you could taste this. It's great." You know, why do people watch shows like that?
Because it makes you feel
you can't understand. You know, it is just a variation of, "Oh man, this tastes really good."
I think coffee is nectar of the gods. I used for a while. Yeah. I thought I'm going to get off coffee. You know, everybody goes through that phase. I'm getting off caffeine. But I love it too much.
I do. I do switch to decaf after the first couple. You know.
Oh yeah, I don't do much.
I just love coffee. I just love. I'm not there for the addictive.
So Illy has a coffee of the month club. I guess you're a member of this, where they send you the coffee every month.
Yes.
Yeah. See, this is how I got sucked into this. In the back of the New York Times Magazine this week, free Francis coffee maker if you sign up for 4 cans of Illy a month. So I said, what the heck?
Wait. Really?
Yeah.
So we stopped getting the print version, so I wouldn't get that.
That's where the Kindle lets you down a little bit. Speaking of, as long as we're talking kitchenware.
Okay.
And then we'll get to Windows. Honest, folks. It's a slow week. It's okay. The washing machine story, the dishwasher with the keyboard.
Yes.
It worked. It worked. Wow. Yeah. So I'm now back to the quiet. You won't hear me clickety-clacketing through the show as you did last week. I'm back to the silent keyboard. It didn't work right away. I had to, like, 4 days in, I thought, oh, it's dry enough. Plugged it in, like, it was typing Q, 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 Q. So I thought, oh, there's still a little water left. So you got to be patient. I waited a full week, and now it's perfect. And there's
having spilled many drinks on my keyboards, I'm very familiar with the repeating key, you know.
Right. It's a little short circuit thing. But the key is to put it through the dishwasher. Look, what's the worst case? It doesn't work. You spend $30 and get a new keyboard. But you put it through the dishwasher, and it's pristine. It's beautiful. Now, I've been getting a lot of email about this subject. I got an email from somebody who said this doesn't work in a hard water area.
Interesting.
Because of the mineral deposits.
It deposits junk in there. Yeah. I can see that. So it's like when you spill a soft drink, you know, eventually the liquid evaporates, but what's left behind is some sort of sugar.
You don't want that.
You know, this is no good.
Sticky. But if that happens, you might want to run it through the dishwasher.
Yes, or just stop drinking in the office. That would be the other.
Or put no coffee in your delicious Illy Cafe, because why spoil the perfection?
There you go.
So Service Pack 1, now on to Windows, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for enjoying Barista Talk. We'll be back next week.
Right.
With a discussion of Colombia versus Bolivia. The better bean. And an interview with Juan Valdez. But do you remember Juan Valdez?
Who now is owned by Microsoft, unfortunately.
Yeah, it probably is. SP1 is out. See, some people are saying they're getting it in Windows Update. Have you got it in Windows Update yet?
No. And this is, I want to test this, obviously, and write about it. And I haven't gone through all my machines yet, but I have been, sort of doing them one by one. And I had one machine that had one of the affected drivers here. One of the nice things that happened this week was Microsoft actually documented those infamous drivers that were causing the problems, the reason they delayed Service Pack 1. And I had what I was told was that if you had an affected driver on your system and you needed to update that first, this would show up as a recommended update.
Oh.
And then after you install that, you would be able to get Service Pack 1. So this actually did happen. It was exactly one of the drivers as listed on their knowledge base article. So I installed it, rebooted, and thought, okay, here it comes. You know, I had the screenshots all loaded up and nothing. Yeah. Nothing.
Well, you said they were going to do a staged rollout.
Yeah, but I don't believe that that's what this is. So my understanding is that there are, of the 12 drivers or driver families that were affected, they told me that 2/3 to 3/4 of these had already been fixed and that the remainder would be fixed by the middle of April. So I'm thinking that there must be one or more drivers on here still that are in the affected category, but they haven't been fixed.
So you're saying if you have a driver that Windows Update knows to be incompatible, it won't offer you SP1?
Yes.
Will it tell you need to fix your driver?
No, because Windows Vista Service Pack 1 at this point is optional, right? And it, like you said, they are phasing it in over time too. There are only certain languages available now. Over time, more will become available. So If you get it now or in, you know, within 30 days, I'm not really sure that it matters too much. And I think the thinking at Microsoft is that for typical consumers, average users, you know, they're not sitting there clicking refresh waiting for it to happen. If you really want it now, you can go to Microsoft.com, go to the download center, and you can find it and download it. You can install it. And the vast majority of people who do that, aside from the fact that they're technical enough to know to do this and want to do this, they're never going to have any problems, even with these affected drivers, because the affected drivers are not they're not positively absolutely going to cause a problem for every single system. It's actually only in very rare circumstances. And even those problems that they cause are usually pretty minimal.
But
worst case scenario, you might
have to. How would you know if you had one of these bad drivers if it doesn't tell you?
Well, you wouldn't, but that's the point. You know, that's why they're doing it the way they're doing it through Windows Update. If you're technical enough to say, I want SP1 right now, you can go download it, you can install it, you probably aren't going to see any problems at all. But if you do, worst case scenario is you might have to go manually download a driver and reinstall it. And the people who are going to go get Windows SP, Vista SP1 right now are smart enough to do that. And I've gotten emails from those people who have said just that. You know, in one case, the worst one I saw was two device drivers weren't working properly, went to the web, downloaded the drivers.
Oh, okay.
Just reinstall them, no problem.
But you're right. Anybody who's motivated enough to download the 435 megabytes...
Right.
Microsoft
is being very conservative with this. I mean, they're being very careful.
Rightly so, after the Service Pack 2 fiasco on SP.
Well, they want people to have a good experience. I think it's a good thing they're doing here. So I think for the average person, if you have Vista and you're allowing automatic updates to do its thing, what will happen is sometime in the next month, you'll automatically download any drivers that you need. They'll eventually become important, which will force automatic updates to install them, you know, on automatically, right, without you doing anything. And then you'll get Service Pack 1, but even Service Pack 1 won't be installed by default. What will happen is it will download it automatically, and then you'll wake up one morning and it will say, hey, you've got this update available. Here's what it's all about. Would you like to install it? And you have to explicitly say, yes, I would like to install it.
So I just went to Microsoft.com/Vista, looked at more downloads, takes you to the download center. It's the number 3 download right now. You click on it, Windows Vista Service Pack 5 Language Standalone. And one of the things they say, it is 435 megs. One of the things they say is, do not click download if you're updating just one computer. A smaller, more appropriate download is available on Windows Update, unless it's not.
Unless it's not. Well, 435 megabytes is the...
That's everything.
Well, it's everything. It's five different language versions.
Oh, I see.
It's every single update and all the prerequisites. It's a bunch of stuff. Now, if you were to download this, there's no way to know on a system-by-system basis, but if you were to download this via Windows Update, it would happen in the background. You wouldn't even...
Right.
You wouldn't typically be interacting with...
It would be, I hope, not 435 megabytes.
It would be significantly smaller than that.
They say it takes 17 hours on dial-up.
Yeah, you're right, right. As it should. Those people should be
punished. You should be punished.
But, you know... Yes. So, I mean, this is the version that's aimed, obviously, primarily at IT pros,
right.
People who are going to be rolling out this thing by the way, if you hear a drilling sound in the background, which you may.
I do, as a matter of fact.
Sounds like somebody's getting dental surgery.
I was wondering, are you opening a dental office in the back?
Sorry.
That's free espresso and oral surgery.
Right. Right. That'll be next week's topic.
Is this the plumbing going in now for the...
This is pre-plumbing. This is the carpentry stuff. Yeah.
Oh, you're doing a little remodel.
Yeah, we're doing the kitchen.
Oh, Shay Theriot.
Well, our house was kind of a horror show when we moved in here several years ago. So the kitchen is the one, or was the one room really that hadn't been updated. We had to do the whole thing over.
That's actually fun. Yeah. That's the fun part.
It's fun, but we're also, you know, living out of our dining room, and
right.
We have to go to the bath to, you know, wash dishes and stuff. And it's
getting the kitchen update takes a while too. Yeah. But it's fun. I don't mean it's fun getting a kitchen remodel. But it is fun.
Well, it's nice thing. It's transformed.
Yes.
You know,
it's really fun taking a house and fixing it up and then having it look gorgeous. And you say,
the guy's great. He's doing the work. So,
what am I going to get on SP1? We'll get back to appliance talk in a moment. But what am I going to get?
Right. Service Pack 1. What are we talking
about? What am I going to get?
I would say from an experience standpoint, not a lot, right? It's a lot of it is plumbing work. They've improved the performance a little bit, especially with file transfers. They've improved compatibility. They've improved reliability and all that kind of stuff. So it's really a lot of fit and finish type stuff. It is, in that sense, a true service pack, you know, a traditional service pack. It's not, there's not, you know, a big new user interface or brand new applications. You know, there's no new media player or version of the browser or anything like that. It's just, it's really just a fine tuning and tweaking of the version of Vista that came out a year ago. So it's just a culmination of, you know, a lot of the fixes they've already shipped plus some new stuff.
Is there anybody who should not get it? I mean, it sounds like it's something everybody should have, right?
I think we joked about this previously, but I don't want to say, and I can't guarantee that this is going to work for everybody. It's, you know, Microsoft and whatever. Yes, the software is complex, but you know, they are working hard to make sure that this goes as smoothly as possible. By the way, one of the things that's really notable about Service Pack 1, this is true of all service packs as well, but they highlighted this to me in a conversation we had recently, was that unlike with Windows, where typically people obtain Windows with a new computer, thus the support they receive has to go through the PC maker, Microsoft ships service packs directly to customers. Thus, Microsoft is the one that supports the service pack. So everyone gets free support from Microsoft. That can be email, live chat, or telephone. It's free. So if you have any problems with installing Service Pack 1 from here on out, they will support it for free in the manner to which you are, you know, most interested, I guess. So, well, that's an interesting point. I mean, you know, there's always that sort of vague thing with Windows because most people don't ever buy it directly from Microsoft. There is this question. Well, where do I get support from exactly? Right.
Well, doesn't Microsoft just say you get it from your hardware manufacturer, not from us?
Typically what happens is anyone you call will tell you that someone else is providing the support.
We don't do it.
So, yeah. Oh, you're having a problem with Windows? No, Microsoft making Windows. That's your problem. And then Microsoft will say, we don't see a receipt here from selling you Windows.
How did you get that?
Yeah.
Let's flip that switch that turns you off. So, but I think the contracts usually say OEMs are responsible for supporting Windows. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. If you buy a new PC, typically, yes, the support would come through the PC maker. Yeah.
But good luck getting it is what you're saying.
Good luck with that. Yeah. And anyone who's ever been on hold to India knows what a process that can be.
You are running Windows 95?
Right.
I will get my supervisor. So,
Bill.
Yeah. Hey, my name is Bill. I am in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah. No, you're not.
Yes, I am. Yeah. Yes, I am.
So get it if it is offered to you, unless it's something. It doesn't seem, I have to say, now that it's been out for 3 or 4 days, mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like there are any howls of pain yet.
No. And I think we all understand there would be, right? I mean, the smallest possible thing will set off a tirade of articles.
Well, think about it. I mean, when you have 150 million installed users, one half of 1% have problems, that's 500,000 people. Yeah. That's 750,000 people, to be exact.
Which maybe explains why they're being so conservative with this.
Yeah. No, in fact, I think so far, so good.
There are some weirdnesses here. You know, if you happen to be running Ultimate Edition or Enterprise Edition and you have a foreign language pack installed, if that language is not on the list of the five that are available now, you can't upgrade to SP1, right?
Right.
You have to wait till that language version is available, which will be mid-April or soon thereafter, kind of thing. Right, I mean, there's stuff like that, you know. But again, I think someone who has installed those things, they probably have an understanding that this is a slightly different deal. And frankly, even those people probably aren't sitting there hitting refresh waiting for Service Pack 1 to happen anyway. So,
right.
I don't know. Anyway, my experience with Service Pack 1 has been seamless on several machines. But now,
so
I'm going
seamless
back.
That you can't even tell you're running it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even.
It doesn't change anything,
really,
right?
It really hasn't changed anything. The only thing I've really noticed, because I do a lot of this, is that in my case, network-based file copy is dramatically faster. And this is true whether you're copying a ginormous file or a couple of files, or more importantly, a folder full of numerous small files, which I do all the time. You know, I copy a version of my website to laptops when I travel. I copy it back when I come back. And it's several thousand teeny, teeny files. And I remember on a pre-Service Pack 1, this thing, it took forever to transfer this. And this has been cut in third easily, the amount of time it takes to transfer that. So that's been a big change. But, you know, that's not really a day-to-day use thing. I mean, right. You know, you put the thing up, it looks the same, it acts the same. You don't really notice much.
Okay. I'm digging. Okay. Big announcement from Microsoft. Hyper-V.
Yes. Hyper-V is the virtualization platform that Microsoft is
I need some coffee. I'm
Oh, God. Are we still here?
Dane, and, bring me my Illy Cafe.
As virtualization technologies go, Leo, this is actually pretty interesting.
Oh, good.
But
so there, this is in replacement of
Virtual Windows
PC
Server 2008. Or? No, so Windows. Let's see. Microsoft has a virtual PC product, right? Which is an application run on Windows.
It's basically still free now.
It is free now.
Yeah.
That's still available. They had a server version of it. They still do, I guess, called Virtual Server, although they won't be updating that anymore going forward, right? But what they have now as a replacement for Virtual Server, which, by the way, is also free, is Hyper-V, which is a component of Windows Server 2008 and presumably future versions of Windows Server. In that sense, it's free. It's, you know, you have to have Windows Server to run it, but that was true of Virtual Server for the most part as well. So, but it is a closer to the metal, sort of more bare bones form of virtualization. It utilizes a hypervisor. It doesn't have this overhead of these application, of these device driver, sort of virtualized device drivers and so forth. So the performance will be better. The scalability will be better, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just a better platform. It's closer to what VMware has, although obviously Microsoft is still lacking on the management front and various other capabilities that VMware offers that Microsoft doesn't, but will presumably in the future. The reason this is a big deal, of course, is because it's free now. It's part of Windows. You know, you'll get it with Windows Server. And Microsoft believes, and I think they're right, that by putting it into the operating system, they'll make virtualization more common. That more and more customers will take advantage of it because it's simply there as part of the thing they're already buying. So the problem with it is that, like some of the Windows Vista features that delayed or were eventually just taken out so that Vista could ship, Hyper-V has been on sort of a different schedule than Windows Server 2008 and has been delayed. So the shipping version of Windows Server 2008 includes a beta version of Hyper-V, not the final release. And Microsoft has pledged that they will ship the final version within 180 days, but August or sooner. So what shipped this week was a release candidate, sort of a near final version of Hyper-V. And obviously you have to have Windows Server 2008 to install it. I believe that I could be wrong about this, but I think that the release candidate actually comes in 32-bit and 64-bit variants, although the actual shipping version will only be 64-bit. So if you have Windows Server 2008, this is something you can download. You can update the components in the system. And this is sort of a preview of how it will work when the final version ships, because that version will be obtained in the same fashion via Windows Update. You can just download the update and you'll be up and running.
So does it run as an application, or is it what does it look like? I don't have Windows Server. What does it look like when it's running?
Well, it depends on how you do it. So it actually changes Windows Server. It's the type of thing where it basically puts a new layer under the operating system, between the hardware and the operating system. And from within Windows Server 2008, if you're using the normal version of the server, which is the graphical version, you know, the typical install version, it runs as a role. You can administer it as a role, but it changes the way the operating system runs so that you can run other operating systems in parallel with Windows Server 2008. It also supports Server Core, and then this isn't available in the beta, but the final version, you'll be able to install just Hyper-V on the hardware, and that will be the only operating system. You won't even have Windows Server 2000, the full version of Windows Server 2008 on there. And that's a more lightweight version, more easily serviceable, more secure, et cetera. So they have the three different options. You can run it on the full server, on Server Core, or as a standalone server.
Cool. That's really neat.
Well, you know, it's a server thing. I don't know.
I think, you know, a lot of people want to use virtual machines on servers, and I think virtualization is becoming bigger and bigger now that it's supported in the Intel hardware. Yes. I think that's great.
Right. And on a related note, you know, one of the things that's come up, and I don't know that we've talked about this on the podcast, but there's been a lot of discussion lately, even though this has been available for years, about people taking Windows Server 2008 and running it as a desktop. And supposedly, you know, this thing actually runs faster than Vista, and thus it's the ideal, you know, workstation platform. And that's a bunch of baloney for a variety of reasons. I mean, Windows Server 2008 and Windows Vista are the exact same operating system. It's ridiculous to suggest otherwise. But I always tell these guys, if you want to be really cool, you know, instead of showing up with your laptop and popping it opening and running Windows Server 2008, what you should be doing is running Hyper-V and then running some other version of Windows on top of that in a virtualized environment. Then you will be cool. But running Windows Server 2008 on a laptop is not cool. It's lame. Yeah. So just so we have that.
Just so we know.
Just so we know where that stands.
Let's be clear. Let's be clear.
Let's be clear. Yes.
Intel is now going to start selling its classmate. I want to call the classmate the OLPC killer. But that would be kind of mean. But it is.
Well, it would certainly be accurate. You know, Intel has gone out of their way to fight OLPC, you know, aside from a very brief period where they were supposedly part of
the. They are on the board. OLPC is the one laptop per child. Nick Negroponte's a dream of getting a inexpensive, at the time, $100, now $200 laptop in the hands of children and schools in underdeveloped nations. Intel, it didn't have an Intel chip in it. An AMD chip in it. So Intel immediately made something equally cheap running Windows. I'm sure Microsoft was involved in it, called the Intel Classmate. Unlike the OLPC, you can get it in the U.S. now.
Soon, yeah. And in Europe. And you just be able to buy it via PC makers soon, I guess.
Are you going to get one?
I will get it to test it. I have to say, you know, I'm intrigued by these ultra mobile computers, right? I bought one of the OLPC Exos last fall when the priority drive.
Did you get yours yet?
Oh yeah, I've had it for quite some time. I don't want to be mean. I mean, I love what they're doing. You know, I love the idea. I'm really unimpressed by this machine, and it's not so much the hardware as it is the software. And it's so different and so weird. I just don't quite get it. You know. Something like the Asus EPC, which, you know, runs a custom version of Linux. It has kind of a real, I don't want to say dumbed down, but a very simplified user interface. To me, that makes plenty of sense. It's fine. You know, it works great. The Exo, I just don't get it. You know, it's just too different.
It's weird. Really different. It is weird. I'm sure if you're a kid who has no experience with the computers, I mean, I guess that's the theory.
Well, but that's the thing. See, I bring these devices into my house. My kids are always really interested in it.
Right.
And they don't know what to make of this thing either.
I know. My son said, well, how do you get Facebook and MySpace on it? That's all he cared about.
Well, you know, and there's some networking issues too. I mean, I haven't tried it on my new router, but you know, back when I first got it, you couldn't see the type of network I had. And
you have to run a script to get WPA working, which I was able to do, but it's a little funky.
I don't know. A little too much work for me. So the Classmate as more I would say it's a cross between the Asus and the Exo in many ways. It's got that kind of rugged, kid-looking, you know, friendly laptop look and feel.
Does it have green ears?
No, there's no rabbit ears or anything. But it's, yeah, you know, whatever. I clearly, people are interested in these kinds of devices, and it's great. I mean, my wife was briefly interested in keeping the Asus because she wanted to use it, you know, something she'd carry around because it was very light. But the thing that she found about that was that, you know, the battery life wasn't that great at all. And I think that's going to be key for these devices. They need to get really good battery life and have an interface that, you know, whether you use a Mac or Windows or whatever, you can kind of pick it up and just use it.
Yeah.
And the Asus has that. The battery life wasn't fantastic, but you know, we'll see what Intel can do with the Classmate. It looks interesting.
I love my Asus. Now that they're coming out with a larger screen, I'm a little, you know, I'm bummed. Yeah. I'll trade in the Asus for a larger screen.
Was it 9-inch on the new one?
Finally 1024x768. So
I would put up with the low res if the keyboard was just bigger. You know, that's what I need.
Patrick complains about the keyboard too. It doesn't bother me.
I just have huge hands. I can't.
Yeah. Well, you know what that means. Big hands,
no,
big
Leo,
heart.
I don't.
Big hands,
oh,
big
yes,
heart.
I think.
Yeah. What did you think?
I don't know.
No. Okay. So we'll look for that. And how much were they going to sell that for? It's not going to be $200.
They were saying $250 to $350.
Really?
I think on configuration, there's going to be a bunch of different versions. So it's not going to be just like the XO where, you know, you can have one as long as you want a green and white one, you know, right, with whatever's in it. That's it. So
it's so funny that that this category, which I think everybody had kind of ignored, the Japanese were the only people making really small computers.
Right.
I mean, remember the Libretto, that which was a neat little computer.
Yeah,
it was really tiny.
I have always lusted after a machine like that.
Yeah, me too.
It was a class of Windows CE devices. I forget what they were called, but they were very wide but very short. And they were, you know, they ran CE, but they had an almost full-size keyboard, clamshell design. You know, I don't know what the exact resolution and dimensions were, but it was very small. It was the type of thing you could open. It wouldn't matter how far the guy in front of you put his seat back.
Yeah, that might be some of it. Really might be why this is happening. Lack of room in the airlines.
Sure. I mean, I getting work done on a plane in many ways can change, you know, the way a trip goes for me, because that's a day of downtime, and if I can just get something done, it's always better for me. But
these things have just really taken off all of a sudden. It may also be because we do more cloud computing, and so a little device like this is fine.
Right. Hey, a device that would connect a keyboard to my iPhone would be great too. You know,
right.
I'd love to see something like that.
Right.
We talked about the Celia Redfly last week. You know, something like that. That's a good idea. So
this is a huge category, and Asus proved it, and now everybody's jumping in. Yep. Have you downloaded Safari 3.1? It's available for Windows and Mac.
Yeah. Did you know? I don't know if you know this, but you know, Apple's actually promoting it through their software update application.
I saw that, and I said, no, I don't want it on my Windows machine.
So that's a little dicey. But I am sort of immediately dismissive of it, but yet I have actually been running it as my primary browser for the past few days because, you know, I should obviously take a look at it and see what it's like. And I don't buy the performance stuff at all. I mean, I'm running IE8, I guess, and also Firefox 3 beta 4. And as far as bringing sites up, I don't believe it's any faster or slower. I mean, they all seem roughly comparable to me. I don't know how they determine these things. I'm sure there are benchmarks and so forth. But in my experience, I think the big deal with Safari is actually the text rendering is really nice.
Yeah.
You know, Apple just does a good job with text for whatever reason.
It looks better on a Mac. I mean, it's a Mac-ish application.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, too. I have to say, I really don't have too many problems with iTunes on Windows for whatever reason.
You're lucky. That's all. You're just lucky.
Well, no, in the sense that I can put up with whatever problems it has.
Oh, okay.
The fact that it doesn't look like a Windows application is not a huge deal to me. I'm okay with it.
Right.
The Safari thing, though, is difficult because, you know, the little buttons are teeny.
Yeah.
The toolbar is teeny.
Yeah.
And there's, unlike other browsers, there's no way to change that. You know, it is what it is.
Yep.
You know, you get what you get. And I don't know. It's a little too non-standard for me. But I guess the big takeaway I've had so far is I really like to lower the number of things I have to or want to install on my system because of how often that I do it. So for me to install and use Safari on an ongoing basis, it would have to offer some huge advantage.
I think we skimmed over this, but I think it's very interesting that Apple is using their update mechanism, which was originally just for iTunes. You get it when you install iTunes QuickTime. Now all of a sudden they're pushing Safari. What else are you going to be pushing Apple?
Sure.
It's interesting. It's a wedge into the Windows world for them.
It is. It's a type of thing that Microsoft would get in trouble for.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Excuse me.
Oh, yeah. If Microsoft started offering Internet Explorer on my Microsoft Office update on the Mac, you bet there'd be howls.
Yeah. Well, that said, you know, Apple is, to bring it all together again, like Illy in some ways, in that, you know, there is an experience there. And if you're happy with the iTunes experience, happy with the iPod experience, you know, you may want to move on to the Apple TV and Safari, and maybe if you like all this stuff, you'll move to the Mac, which is what they're really after,
right.
I would imagine.
Oh yeah, that's
you
where
know,
their money is.
Their so I guess I don't begrudge them that, but I just don't see any huge advantage or maybe even any advantage to using this compared to something like Firefox, where like Safari, you have to go out, go find a thing, get it, download it, install it. But the advantage to me, to Safari, is all the add-ons. that are available. It's so extensible.
Oh, yeah. Now, have you upgraded to beta 4 of Firefox? I guess that's the most recent.
Yeah, that's the version I'm using, yeah. And, I'm not a huge fan of the user interface, although...
Kills me, though. I can't use my extensions. That's what's killing me.
So, I don't use too many extensions per se. I guess I have three installed. And for me... The ones that I use are working, but you said, what are you using?
Like, a lot of them. I use a Delicious extension from Yahoo that I really like and need.
It's in beta, so I think the expectation.
Yeah.
And Mozilla, of course, is having a contest now to see who can deliver the best extensions. And one of the things they're opening up this time with this contest is they want to look at existing extensions that have been updated to work with Firefox 3 and take advantage of either Firefox 3 specific features or the new look and feel of the browser. You know, so in other words, extensions that maybe have been around for a little while, but they've been updated so they look cool in the new version. And I think that's kind of a neat idea.
Yes. Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, it's now let's talk about speed because that's where Apple is making a lot of claims. They say the Safari is the fastest browser ever and so forth. Do you notice a difference?
No. That's the thing. I don't. Not at all.
Same.
No. What I notice is,
technically be different, but you can't tell.
IE7 obviously works with everything. Firefox works with everything basically. It's been a long time since I've run into a site where this doesn't work well in Firefox. You know, that used to happen all the time. This does happen with Safari still, and to me that just makes it. I don't know. Even some of my own stuff, you know, I've got some things where it cuts off the bottoms of certain table types, and I don't know why. You know, it works fine in the other browsers, so I don't know. Oh, the other thing it does that I think is just insane is it has OS X buttons and things.
Right.
So if you load a page, it has a web form with buttons or whatever.
Yeah, it's got those lozenges.
The UI buttons. Elements. Yeah, what the heck is that? Why would I? I don't know.
Well. I like it. That's one of the reasons Firefox on the Mac, and this is what you were talking about, native UI. Firefox on the Mac and on Vista, it's too bad because it does look generic. It doesn't look like it's tuned for the UI.
Right. So if I was a Macintosh user, using Firefox I think would make a lot of sense. I might still look at Firefox, especially now that it is more Mac-like on the Mac, right? They're trying to make at least some cursory, move toward making it look native. But for the same reasons, I might consider Firefox. Plus, you can, Firefox is extensible. So even if the basic Firefox UI doesn't look good, you'll always be able to download a new look and feel, which is really nice. So if you want something that looks more Mac-like on the Mac or more Vista-like on Vista, those things are out there. They're available for you to download. And whereas, Safari is just some weird look.
We are Apple. You may not change anything.
Yes.
We know best. They know better. Yes. They know better. We know best. You know best when it comes to tips on Vista. We're going to get your Windows tip in a bit and your software pick. I have one for a change as well.
Okay.
But first, time to talk about our sponsor, the wonderful folks at Audible.com. Audible.com/Windows will get you a coupon for a free book when you sign up. New users only. We have a lot of... Now, it's funny because when we first started doing these ads, I think a lot of you had never heard of or weren't not yet Audible subscribers. I think now the majority of you are. Again, I don't know what that means. We're going to have to come up with some new... Actually, we do have some interesting new campaigns to talk about, believe it or not.
Oh, sorry.
But don't laugh at me.
I'm not laughing.
The Audible folks have actually come up with some great deals for the Twit folks.
Okay.
We'll talk about those. But we also like to always talk about books.
Yes.
Because we know you love listening to Audible books. And I know you're an Audible listener. What are you listening to these days? Or what's your next book, I guess I should ask?
Yeah, it is my next book, actually. Although, it's funny. I find myself divided between real books and things I can get on the Kindle and, of course, the audiobooks.
Yeah, so I do the same thing. But I always used to have 4 or 5 books on my bedside table anyway.
That's right. So I've got this sort of rotating. It's hard to know.
Whatever I'm in the mood for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, on the audiobook side, of course, Arthur C. Clarke just passed away. He's most famous for 2001, A Space Odyssey. And I actually kind of enjoyed that series. The books are quite different from the movies, by the way. And, of course, there are more of the books. But to me, the biggest Arthur C. Clarke story was always Rendezvous with Rama.
Yes.
And that's another case where they turned it into a series. And the first book, to me, is the you know, is the best one by far.
I love Childhood's End, too. Did you read
Childhood, that? Right, the classic, yeah, that's absolutely.
What a great book that was.
So this guy's amazing, and I looked on Audible to see what they had, and I think the best one there is probably The Collected Stories of Arthur C. Clarke, 1937 to 1999. Includes all kinds of great stories, Hammer of God and so forth, but one of the stories that's in there is called The Sentinel, and that is the beginnings of what became 2001 A Space Odyssey. So it's kind of interesting on that note. Now, and this is something I haven't looked at on Audible. I mean, I've always been a big science fiction short story fan, so Larry Niven type stuff or Jerry Purnell. I just love that stuff, you know, and I think Arthur C. Clarke is another guy.
He does wonderful classic. Short stories, yeah.
Yeah.
Classic. They have the 9 billion names of God in here, which is...
Yeah.
What a great book that is. What a great story. You know, I think if you're listening to audiobooks, especially if people are starting with audiobooks, short stories might be a good choice because sometimes, yes. You know, you're daunted by the idea, this is going to be 20 hours and I have to kind of follow through. But a short story, you can listen on one commute. You know, it's almost like a podcast.
Yeah, there
so,
you go.
So that's I think that's an excellent choice. The collected stories. And I think this is all of them of Arthur C. Clarke from the beginning to... his last short
Yeah, this
stories.
Is a pretty definitive collection, yeah.
Yeah, I think he wrote the last one around 1999, 2000. It's funny, he stopped writing right around 2001. I guess he figured... In fact, I think he even said that. I think he said, once Neil Armstrong walked on the moon...
Well, I've become sort of passé.
He said, the stuff I'm writing about, you know, is no longer fiction.
Right.
He, in 1945, predicted satellites in geostationary orbits. Mm-hmm. And in fact, those orbits are now called Clarke orbits. Yeah, so
yeah, that's great.
He'll be immortal in that respect. A very good Audible pick, I think. The Collected Stories of Arthur C. Clarke, available as your free book, if you'd like.
Sure.
And this is
the other one. I'll throw this out as kind of an aside. I mean, I actually had read this in hardcover when it first came out, but you may be aware that there's an HBO series occurring right now around the John Adams book. And John Adams, the book by David McCulloch, is also available on Audible. And that's... It's fantastic. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic.
Well, you're living in the heart of this. I mean, you're right where it all happened.
Yeah, although I guess they filmed it in Virginia, by the way. Which
did
is
they really?
Yeah.
Have you seen it yet? I just watched the first two episodes. Oh, is it great?
Yeah, I no longer get HBO, so I will eventually see this on DVD.
They'll put it out on DVD. I don't know how many episodes it's going to be. The first one, the pilot, I guess, is a little slow. Mm-hmm. But it sets you up because you get to understand why revolution is necessary. The second one, I was in tears. I don't know if they built a set or I suspect they didn't. I think they're in Independence Hall. I've been there.
Yeah, supposedly the places they are just amazing looking.
They're in Independence Hall.
Paul Giamatti is one of the best actors
He's great, but you know, guy who does Ben Franklin's wonderful, mm-hmm. Jefferson. It brings this to life in a way I've never seen it brought to life before with real attention, because it's based on the McCullough book, real attention to the historic authenticity. And, you know, Adams' part in all of this is often downplayed, but he was one of the authors of the Declaration of Independence. Some say he really came up with all the main ideas of it.
Right.
And this is a, boy, is that number two. It breaks your heart. I mean, I was in tears. It's the most beautiful, amazing thing. If you want to become a patriot again, just watch that. And it reminds you of what's so great about this country and just a wonderful, wonderful. But I agree with you on the book. In fact, I listened to it on Audible in abridged form because that's all they had at the time. I bought the book because I loved it so much. And then I listened to it in unabridged form.
Yeah, there you go.
It is one of the great
history
books.
Yeah, but enough time has passed. I mean, why not? You know,
it's a great history book. So two good stories. Thank you. Two good books. Either one could be yours free by going to audible.com/windows. You might wonder how a busy guy like Mr. Paul Thurrott finds time to read. Well,
I was just thinking about that the other day. You know, I would be fearful to ever actually try to document this because I work a lot. You know, I'm kind of a workaholic.
Well, anybody who's self-employed does. We have to.
Yeah, but I do actually read a lot as well, and I also I watch. I don't want to say TV. I don't want to bring up images of Paul watching sitcoms every night. It's not like that. But I do watch a lot of travel and history and true crime type TV shows.
But
and,
you're half asleep when you're doing that.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess I would be. But I don't. It seems like the amount of stuff I do can't possibly fit into the amount of time that's in a week. But I it must. And I'd almost, yeah, like I said, I'd be fearful to ever try to figure that one out. But
well,
I play video games, you know.
That's true. That's what I don't understand. I do all those things too, but the video games, just I couldn't find time to do that.
Yeah,
something has to go. Something has to go. But Audible is a great way to get your reading done when you're, you know, stuck doing things you can't do anything else, like driving or working out at the gym. I listen while I'm working out. It really makes the workouts go fast. I know Amber listens while she's running. If you're a runner, this is a great service. Audible.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Paul Thurrott's Windows Vista tip. Well, we just discovered one while we were getting on the phone here.
You
click the time.
I feel like such a tool because I did it by mistake while we were talking.
He goes, I'm talking to him before as we're setting up for the show, and he goes, "Whoa!" I said, "What, Paul? Whoa! I never saw that before."
Yeah, just in case you actually, believed I know everything about Windows.
Well, then nobody cares because there's all these little things hidden in there, you know.
Right, so, well, I'm gonna have to. I just sent in a chapter that included this feature, and of course now I'm gonna have to fix it. So, yeah, this isn't the actual tip, but I guess we'll throw it out there because it's kind of
a freebie.
Yeah, it's a free. It's a 2-for-1. So I think most people realize that if you click the time in the taskbar in Windows Vista, it brings up this new date and calendar panel, which is really attractive looking and nice. And it has, you know, the date at the top. It's got the month with a grid, you know, featuring the month. It has an analog clock. Below it is a digital version. And then there's a link to change the date and time settings. So the thing I guess I'd never seen before, and I feel stupid about this, but if you click on the month where it says March 2008, and there are arrows so you can go back in time or ahead in time. But if you click on the month, it actually changes the view so that it shows a grid of all the months in 2008. And of course, you can click on any of the months, but if you click 2008, it changes to a grid that shows a variety of dates. In this case, 2000 through 2009. But if you click on the thing that says 2000 to 2009, it changes to a grid that goes from 1990 all the way to 2099.
That's so cool. And it does it prettily, and it slides in and out. I like
it. Right. It does it with a nice visual effect, and it so you could actually, I don't know why you would want to do this, but you could go to December 2099, and actually that's as far as you can go. So I guess that's the lifetime expectancy of Windows Vista right there. Well, December 31st, 2099.
Okay. That's too bad. Because on a Mac, you can go to 2100, but okay.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Because you know this is okay. Well, Mac OS 10 Leopard supports 2100, so therefore the Mac is superior.
I don't know that for a fact. It might well stop.
I'm saying that now because otherwise I would have gotten that email.
You will. Well, now you won't.
Because you know some Mac guys frantically checking the calendar.
I'm sure we can do that. Yeah, definitely do that.
You know that Apple fixed the, you know, year 2000 bug before any other PC maker. Yeah.
You know, actually, Apple's going to have a problem, as with all Unix operating systems. I don't know if Windows will have this problem in 2038.
Yeah.
I'm long gone by then, but I just thought I'd mention it for my kids.
What's going to happen?
Well, the Unix dates are 16-bit, I guess, and the Epic begins January 1970. So they can only go... Is that 16 or 32-bit? Maybe it's 32-bit, but after 2038, it'll roll back to January 1970.
Wow.
Which I wouldn't mind.
I'm going to guess that in the next 30 years or whatever that is, that they will...
They have some time to fix that.
Solve this problem.
Well, you know how it is, though. It's not a crisis until it's 2037.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it says, oh, everybody goes, oh my goodness, what are we going to do?
Hey, if they can fix the year 2000 bug or whatever.
They did too, didn't they? I remember we were ready at Tech TV. We were ready to be up all night. We had
sitting in the bunk waiting for
we had a desk. You know, we were set ready and we were on call. Because, who knew? It could have been the biggest disaster to hit information technology.
Sure.
And I was at a New Year's party. I kept calling in. Thinking, is it all right? Is everything all right?
I kept calling in, but the phones wouldn't work.
Turned out nothing happened. So now you had another tip, I think, prepared.
Oh, I do. This one is actually from a reader. I thought this was kind of interesting. Romy, I don't have any further name data there, but from Romy, who wrote that you can go to a certain location in Explorer and recover images from Photo Gallery. So if you're using Windows Photo Gallery or Windows Live Photo Gallery, you know that you can go in and you can edit photos in certain ways. So you can, you know, apply fix red eye, crop the picture, change the detail, color exposure, etc. When you do that, Windows Photo Gallery makes a copy so that your original is not overwritten. And from within the user interface of Windows Photo Gallery, it's not too difficult. You can go in and you can revert to original, but then that will overwrite the change file. But if you want to have access to both, there's actually a location you can navigate to. So you can go get your original image, and that way your edited image will be in the file system back where the original file used to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. So you import, pictures from your camera. Maybe they go into your pictures folder somewhere. You edit them in Windows Live Photo Gallery or Windows Photo Gallery. The versions in that folder are now the new versions, but it has made backup copies. And what is documented is how you go find those original images. So I'm going to give you the simplest way to get to it. The version I got used some sort of a longer string. But if you navigate into your user folder, right, typically C users / in my case, Paul, there are hidden folders under there. And one of them is called app data. This used to be application data in earlier versions of Windows. There's a lot of stuff in there, including the Mozilla, Firefox, user settings are in there and so forth. App data /local/Microsoft/Windows Photo Gallery. And then you'll see a folder in there called original images. And that has all your original unedited images. Wow. This is where they get backed up to. And you can actually just type this string into your into the run menu. If you have that enabled or in Vista, you can type it into the start search, the start menu search block. You can just paste that right in. It opens the Explorer window, and you can access your unedited original photos.
That's very handy.
Yeah.
Do they not document that that's where they're sticking them?
I don't believe so. I've never heard this before. I didn't know. But, yeah.
They really ought to mention that to people.
Well, I think that what they're thinking is that for most people, what you want to edit your images, and then you're done.
Right.
You may want to go back, maybe, and revert them to the original. So they give you that in the user interface. But actually, in some cases, I could see where it'd be nice to have both the original and the edited version side by side. I know that certain photo manipulation applications actually do it that way. But at least Microsoft does back them up. So this is a way to get back to those originals without overwriting your edited version.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I thought that was kind of nice.
All right. That's our tip. You got a pick for us, sir?
Yes. Yes, I do. We previously talked about the Windows Live Suite, and I mentioned Windows Live Writer as part of that. But I've been, ever since I switched over to the SuperSite blog, which runs on Community Server, I've been unable to use Windows Live Writer, which I love. And I got in touch with the guy who runs the server at Pent, and I asked him, am I missing something? Is there some reason this thing won't connect? And it turns out we had something misconfigured. It was our fault. So he fixed that, and now I've been using Windows Live Writer for the past week or so.
Oh,
and I
got to
tell
you,
I love this thing. Yeah. And the reason this is
if you're a blogger, this is what you mean.
Yeah. Well, in my case, we're going to be switching the SuperSite sometime this year entirely over to Community Server for a variety of reasons. This is something I've been very fearful of because I do the website in a certain way. Frankly, the performance on the blog side hasn't been great.
Mm.
Really nervous about this. But obviously, with the SuperSite, it will be on different servers. The performance isn't going to be an issue. But the way I update the site is going to be completely different. And the Community Server web-based stuff is okay. But being able to do this in Windows Live Writer, this is like having Microsoft Word. And I kind of I formulate it however I want. Now, it's important to note that this thing isn't designed for Community Server specifically. It works with virtually.
Oh, I use it with WordPress.
Every
it works
blogger.
Great.
Yeah, it works with Blogger. Works with, obviously it works with Microsoft stuff too, but it works with virtually anything that's out there for blogs. And it's wonderful. It's just wonderful. And so I'd like to just highlight that this week as sort of the pick of the week. The other thing I'd like to mention, because we've talked about this stuff in the past, is that two of the applications I use related to DVDs have been upgraded in major ways recently, and it's worth knowing that and going to get the updates. One is Handbrake, which was updated to 2.4, kind of a big update. They've been playing around with the UI. Handbrake is an application that always worked better on the Mac than it does on Windows.
Yeah.
And I have to say, as of 2.4, they finally have gotten it, so they work just as well in each one.
Oh, it's such a useful program. I think it's great.
Yeah, they fixed a lot of UI problems there. Really nice on Windows now. The other one is Slysoft AnyDVD, and this is the application that takes off the copy protection of DVDs, but it also does some really useful things like allow you to skip over all that baloney that's on the front of DVDs so you don't have to watch all the previews. You can either automatically jump right into the movie or just jump right to the title DVD menu.
Right.
Big upgrade there. They did some stuff around Blu-ray, which I can't test because I don't have a Blu-ray player on.
They cracked BD Plus, which kind of is amazing.
Yeah, so I guess I'm going to have to start looking into Blu-ray players now for my PC. This is something I hadn't really been thinking about, but I'll have to take a look at it. I just re-plugged in my Xbox HD DVD player to the PC to see how things were going there, before I throw it in the trash.
Right.
And, that stuff all works fine, too. So that'll be nice for those poor guys that invested that.
Throw it in the trash? You're not going to throw it in the trash, really, are you?
Well, what am I going to do with it? If anybody wants my HD DVD player and the
but don't
two
you have
HD...
any movies left? Oh, you only have two.
I have two, yeah. I think two.
What are the two?
I have King Kong, and I think it's the first Bourne movie, Bourne Identity.
Right.
I think those are the two.
It's funny because Netflix said they're going to stop sending HD DVD movies out, only Blu-ray movies. And I just got Elizabeth on HD DVD, so I'm glad I didn't throw out my HD DVD player. I still may occasionally find it useful.
Excellent. And, well, I'm going to get rid of mine. So,
are you really? Wow.
Well, what am I going to use it for? I don't know.
What
it's a
is
hunk
it?
Of plastic. I don't know. So if anybody wants it, just write me an email.
You're not going to put it on internet-nexus?
Yeah. I just get rid of it.
It was too noisy anyway. Who wants it?
Actually, connected to the PC, I don't really notice it too much. But adding it to the cacophony that is the Xbox 360.
That's true. Yeah. Hey, I got mine back, by the way. They fixed the red ring of death. No red ring. It's working fine. What?
In a little bit of hubris, Microsoft had a red ring of death on an Xbox 360 at the Game Developer Conference this past week. Yeah.
Did they really?
One of the demo machines red ringed on them. Oh, it's good stuff.
That's got to hurt. Oh,
it should hurt. They should be punished.
It should hurt. That's true.
It's not good.
All right. Well, we're done here, I believe.
I've had enough of you, sir. Goodbye.
All right. We'll be back next week. We're going to take a little hiatus when I am in Australia, but we have at least one more show, maybe two more shows before I go. And we will get those out, and then there'll be a week or two off for not just you, but a lot of shows. So,
yeah, maybe we can do something to fill the time there a little bit.
Let's figure out if we could pre-tape something. I would like that.
Puppet show or something.
A puppet
kind of
show would be great.
Tree recital or something.
Yeah. We could do, we could do our Bill Gates impressions. That's always fun.
Play the scene from the South Park movie where they bring in Bill Gates.
That's
to
good.
Fix windows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I'm here to fix your windows.
I laughed so hard when that happened, I missed the next 10 minutes of the movie.
They are clever, aren't they? They really do it. I loved their World of Warcraft episode, too.
Yeah, priceless.
All right, Paul Thurrott, it's been great talking to you. We're going to see you next week on Windows Weekly.